Hello, this is Cliff Redford. I'm a veterinarian who travels around the world to help people and animals in need, and you're listening to The Happy Pod on the BBC World Service.
I'm Alex Ritson, and in this edition, the vet who's found fulfillment offering his life-saving skills for free around the world.
These trips make me a better person, they make me a better father. It just teaches me to love life and to love people from different walks of life.
Why a man in his 80s has opened his home to vulnerable children through foster care.
It's partly selfish. It keeps me, you know, I lost my wife about 5 or 6 years ago and can be pretty lonely once you're on your own. And I wanted to do something other than just sit and watch television.
Also, a chance to own a piece of comedy history and...
It was over 300 pints, we think, at the end, but well worth it.
The pub landlady whose footballing free drinks offer turned into a bit of an own goal. We start with the story of a Canadian vet who's been giving his time to pet owners around the world, treating animals in Jamaica, Greece, and twice he's been in Ukraine since the war with Russia started. Cliff Redford from Markham in Ontario has run his own clinic for 25 years, but he likes to spend time away volunteering and giving his skills in places where there is a shortage of vets. His most recent expedition, the town of Iqaluit in the most northerly Canadian territory of Nunavut. He spoke to Harry Bly about his adventures, starting with Iqaluit.
I've been a veterinarian since 1998, so a little bit over half my life. I love it. It is the greatest profession, and I love traveling, and I love volunteering and learning new stuff. It is, of course, very cold, and when we go in January, it's very dark. There's only sunlight for about 4 hours a day, but it is the most beautiful part of the country at that time of the year that I've ever experienced. It was like stepping onto another planet. The ice and the snow and the Arctic Ocean, not only frozen over, but frozen over with these giant car-sized chunks of ice. And then, you know, when we got there, the work was extreme. We were very, very busy. So Iqaluit and the entire territory of Nunavut has had no veterinarian there for 4 years. And there's 7,000 people in the main community in Iqaluit, and most of them have pets. They flocked to the animal hospital when they heard a veterinarian was going to be there.
And Cliff, you've been abroad as well. You've been to Jamaica, you've been to Greece, you've also been to Ukraine. What are your strongest memories from those trips?
Yeah, Ukraine, I went twice, and my daughter accompanied me the first time. The very first time, it was only 3 or 4 weeks into the war. We basically helped people who were bringing their pets across the border who were escaping the war. I made the decision to go back on my own, and I went back on my own because it was too dangerous to take my daughter. I was heading into Kharkiv, so, you know, just maybe 50 kilometers away from the fighting. The main thing that sticks with me is the people, how brave they are and how stubborn in a good way. Like, they were so committed to the animals, and it just inspires me to keep doing what I'm doing, and those people are amazing heroes. I felt really blessed to be able to spend time with them. Animal Rescue Kharkiv, ARK, is the team I worked with. They were working with a military group that basically, as the military group would search abandoned buildings or buildings that had been bombed and destroyed or areas that had been attacked, they would find animals that had been injured. And then we would go and pick the animals up, or we would sometimes trick them into coming and dropping the animal off at our hospital, knowing that by the time the soldier brought the little cat or the little dog to our hospital, they had already fallen in love with it. So they had agreed to adopt them. You know, I tear up as I am right now talking about it. One of the things I'm most proud of. I just hope, I hope it ends. I hope the war ends, and I hope, obviously the people and then the animals they care for are safe.
What is it about giving your time that makes you and your family happy?
The reality is the first trip to Jamaica, although it was a 3-week volunteer trip, there were some other motives. I was going to film my adventures to actually pitch a docuseries idea. Very, very quickly, my interest for filming and for this telling of these stories took a back step to the volunteer work, because I realized how fulfilling it was for me. I realized, although I was going into Jamaica as this North American, highly trained veterinarian, highly experienced, I learned so much from the people there. So I started volunteering, and while I not only volunteer locally once a week, right now every Thursday with a wildlife place, traveling, we purposely pick places that we've never been to and places that are very different from Toronto or very different from your regular tourist place. It opens our eyes. I feel that these trips not only make me a better veterinarian, as I've said, I learned so much, but they make me a better person. They make me a better father. It just teaches me to love life and to love people from different, you know, walks of life, and how similar we all are. I mean, that's the honest truth. And it's just a great, humbling, heartwarming experience every single time.
Veterinarian Cliff Redford. Now, to a man who's taken the rather unusual step of becoming a foster parent in his 80s. Nigel, who's now 88, is a former fighter pilot with Britain's Royal Air Force. He believes he's one of the oldest single foster carers in the UK, and it says it keeps him young. In England, foster carers usually need to be aged 21 or over and have a spare room in their home. But there is no upper age limit. Nigel told the BBC's Simon Parkin why he decided to volunteer.
It's partly selfish. It keeps me young. You know, I lost my wife about 5 or 6 years ago, and we've been married for 50 years, and it can be pretty lonely once you're on your own. And I wanted to do something other than just sit and watch television all the time. And it suddenly came to me that that was perhaps the thing to do, or a thing I could try to do. It helps to keep me young. It gives me an interest. And it's really, you know, when I took my latest foster child, I mean, we were virtually on a sort of probationary period with each other for 3 months. I mean, I wanted to make sure I clicked with him. But similarly, there are not many teenagers who want to live with an 88-year-old. So.
What a lovely way, though, of exploring the sort of the age generations. And, you know, certainly as a grandparent of a small child, the relationship that you have with that child is very different to the relationship that you have with your own children. And you know this, too. So, you know, age sort of has no boundary in a funny sort of way.
No, it doesn't. Mind you, having gone through foster training, I'm surprised I was ever allowed to have my own children, you know. We're obviously totally unqualified. But
well, then they don't come with instructions. So we're lucky we got to where we did with them. You've proved many times, I guess, that you're absolutely the perfect person to do this, because you've got time on your hands and clearly a bit of an adventurous spirit. I mean, the places that you've been to with your foster children are quite amazing.
That's right. You have got time on your hands. This is one of the big advantages. I may be old, but being retired, you have got 24 hours a day which you can devote to it, whereas people going to a younger family, they may have their own children, they certainly haven't got as much time to devote to one single foster child. However, it's a mixed blessing, and it's a lot of work if you dig it on your own, because you've got all the housekeeping and the cooking, the shopping, the clothes buying, everything, and dealing with the schools and their interests and their sports and being an all-time taxi driver. So you don't have a hell of a lot of free time. But at the same time, it can be very rewarding if you both hit it off, and I think we have, so it's good. It works. And nobody should put it off by the feeling that they're too old for it anyway.
And, I mean, let's talk about that. You said that you don't have a lot of free time to go and do the fun stuff, but you've used your free time very wisely. You've been go-karting and even Glastonbury?
Oh, yes, Glastonbury. Well, I haven't missed a festival for 35 years. He had a great time out. You know, we ended up in the third row in front of Coldplay, which was fantastic, and he certainly enjoyed it.
The chat that we're just having now, I could talk to you for hours, and I'm sure you've got some amazing stories. Are you sharing those with your foster child, and what is their reaction to this? Because, you know, this open book of a different world almost, isn't it?
Well, that's right, and it is, yeah, and I have got thousands of stories from all sorts of different things. I've had a very interesting life, only a fraction of which, you know, I've ever talked about. I've done all sorts of other things. I had a month in India as a schoolboy, as a guest of the Indian government. I had American relations. I ended up visiting them in America, dinner with the Windsors in Palm Beach and things like that. Oh, amazing things I've done in life. But there we are. My wife and and I, we were married for 50 years, and we lived in New York and Paris and Brussels, and we got around, and it was very interesting.
You are here, Nigel, to talk about fostering, and like you say, it has given you a lot, and it's given you a kind of a new lease of life at this point. What would you say to anyone who's listening to this who was maybe like you, got a bit of time and got a bit of space?
Give it serious thought and go for it, and don't be put off. In the long run, it's very rewarding, and you'll never regret having done it, I can assure you, if they decide to opt for it.
Since you came into contact with the person that you're spending your foster time with, what's been the loveliest moment so far?
The most rewarding moment was when he recently got his exam results and came out with 6 very good GCSEs and turned around and said, it's entirely thanks to you. And that was a very, tear-jerking moment, really.
88-year-old foster dad Nigel speaking to Simon Parkin. Indian fans of some of the world's biggest music stars are looking forward to a record-breaking year of live shows. Ed Sheeran, whose rare Bhutan concert we heard about in the last episode, is due to play his biggest ever series of shows in India later this year. Last month, Coldplay kicked off their world tour in Mumbai, and more big names are to come. Over the last few decades, international artists have often skipped the country during their tours. So, what do these headline visits mean for Indian fans and musicians? Manish Pandey has been finding out.
To have that experience in our own country is, I don't think, something that we had. So it's been really cool to see that it's happening more and more. Hello, I am Anushka Maske. I've been making music since 2020.
Anushka feels big artists coming to India provides a chance for independent ones like her.
I myself had the opportunity to open for Ben Howard. It was never about the quality, it was only about discovery, it was only about visibility.
According to ticketing platform Book My Show, there was an 18% rise in people going to live shows in India in 2024. And it's not only Coldplay. We've already had that viral Dua Lipa performance in Mumbai. And the next few months, we'll see Ed Sheeran playing his biggest ever tour of the country, with Lollapalooza Festival in March featuring the likes of Shawn Mendes and Louis Tomlinson.
Hi, I'm Frizzell D'Souza. I'm a singer. It was oh so easy to be confused. I've been following Ed Sheeran for the longest time because he's one of my earliest songwriter heroes. A price you pay to win a game. He did start off like a lot of us who are starting out in India, who are playing small pubs, who are doing a lot of solo gigs. And I very much relate to that. And to know that the artist's life is something that's a slow burn, something that's a long haul. It's very reassuring to know that, okay, if someone like him can actually do it, even though he's such a big superstar right now. He did start kind of at the same place that I did.
So, what's the attraction to India now?
We are a country with more than 1.5 billion people, so there's definitely people who are like longing to hear these artists.
Peony is a music journalist and thinks artists see an opportunity to grow their own brand through India's large population. I am the Shreer Punjabiya. And that Indian singer Diljit Dosanjh's collaborations have helped too.
Diljit Dosanjh, for example, has been doing a world tour and he's been selling out shows around the world. And all of this gives us so much recognition. I think we did not have the correct infrastructure in the past, but now we are in a position where we can host all of these big events.
And she thinks it'll help Indian artists, not just in India, but based all around the world. Despite the progress, there have been complaints by fans over prices and the quality and availability of venues.
So what we need are more venues, more bigger venues, better systems in place for music festivals. Anything is possible in this country.
Journalist Peony Hawani ending that report from Manish Pandey. Here's another quick story we wanted to share from India, from the central Madhya Pradesh region. Villagers were shocked to find a tiger from a nearby reserve stuck in a deep well with a boar for company. It's thought the young tigress was chasing her prey when they both fell into the hole. The big cat initially tried to continue its hunt, batting at the boar in the water before clinging onto a metal hoop on the side with both her paws. team of around 60 rescuers lowered a raft for the tiger, who then allowed the boar to climb on too. The big cat, who couldn't be tranquilised in case she drowned, was then coaxed slowly into a large wooden crate, to the delight of dozens of onlookers. The boar was also rescued, and both were released back into the nature reserve separately. Coming up in this podcast, we meet a man helping protect endangered frogs.
I feel really proud that at London Zoo I'm able to champion the underdogs, the amphibians and the reptiles and so on.
When he died 2 years ago, the Australian satirist and comedian Barry Humphries was described as one of the greatest raconteurs of his age. His most famous creation was the character Dame Edna Everidge, whose shrill tones, lilac-rinsed hair and outlandish spectacles charmed audiences worldwide. The suburban housewife was flamboyant, politically incorrect and extremely funny. Dame Edna became an international star in the 1980s. Her boisterous greeting, "Hello, possums," was instantly recognisable. Now some of Barry Humphries' personal items, including Dame Edna props, are going up for auction. Vincent Dowd has been to see what's on offer.
The auction in London is of art and books assembled over decades by Barry Humphries. One of the two figures who loom over the pre-sale exhibition is not a surprise.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the Barry Humphries conglomerate proudly present the First Lady of World Theatre, Melbourne housewife, mother and megastar, Dame Edna Everidge.
A room at Christie's is devoted to Edna's exotic fashion sense. Curator Benedict Winter.
You couldn't really have a Barry Humphries auction without some Dame Edna. And, of course, you can't really have Dame Edna without some glasses or face furniture, whether it's something like the possum glasses with the little Diamante eyes or a classic Dame Edna pair, just flared, encrusted with rhinestones.
What's the estimate on those?
The estimate is £1,000 to £1,500.
One notable dress boasts an iconic image from 1890s Scandinavian art.
This is Edvard Munch's Scream, which Dame Edna wore on a Scandinavian tour. But then on the reverse of the dress is Dame Edna herself screaming with the Sydney Opera House behind. Dame Edna said that the Scream was a representation of a woman who'd realised she'd lost her earrings.
But Mark Wiltshire, books expert at the auction house, says with Humphries, another figure is always there in the background.
The nexus of this entire collection is Oscar Wilde. And the connections that come from that are extraordinary. You know, the importance to Barry Humphries of Oscar Wilde really can't be overstated. Barry, in his own life, championed so many of the things that were important to Oscar. You know, beauty, wit, theatre, literature.
Here we have probably the most famous work of the 1890s, The Importance of Being Earnest. And this is inscribed by Oscar Wilde to his publisher. So this is almost the most desirable copy you could possibly purchase.
I would go one step further and remove your almost to say that it is the most desirable copy. This is number one of 12 of the deluxe issue that were printed.
Am I allowed to ask you what the estimate is?
The estimate is £100,000 to £150,000. The realised price, who knows?
It's clear Barry Humphries relished the quiet subversion of 1890s England by Wilde and others. But Benedict Winter thinks the comedian also showed deep human understanding.
But I think Barry was endlessly curious and he understood the human character. And, you know, you see that in Dame Edna. That is an expression of a human character. And I think in his art collecting, he was fascinated by character, by what it means to find interest in literature. And it's a collection built with great curiosity.
Benedict Winter ending that report by Vincent Dowd. You might have heard the very good news this week about some teeny tiny creatures on the verge of extinction. This is the call of Darwin's frogs, native to Chile, which are endangered because of a deadly fungus. But now, thanks to an extraordinary rescue mission, more than 30 froglets have been born at London Zoo to male parents, with the help of Ben Tapley, who's the curator of Amphibians and Reptiles. We wanted to find out more about the man who's dedicated his life to saving creatures that some may find it hard to love. The Happy Pod's Vanessa Heaney spoke to Ben, starting with this week's amazing arrivals.
It was one of the best feelings ever. It was one of my career highlights. I mean, we knew the males were pregnant, but actually seeing these tiny, tiny little frogs hopping around was just so heartwarming.
And are you surprised at the amount of interest that there's been about these frogs and international interest as well?
Yeah, well, I have to say I'm slightly biased being a frog lover. I mean, Darwin's frogs are iconic, and because they breed in this way, I expected it to attract a little bit of attention, but nowhere near as much attention as we've got, which is lovely for the frogs and for the project. The problem was that this was an urgent rescue because a disease called amphibian chytrid had arrived in their stronghold, and there wasn't capacity or facilities that could be kind of readied in time in Chile. And that's why we stepped in as a partner on the project and have taken the frogs into our care. But ideally, in the long term, Darwin's frog populations will be established in Chile.
I'm really curious, Ben, how did you get into frogs? Were you quite little?
I was tiny when I was when I first got into frogs and salamanders. I think it was just looking in a pond and I saw all those amazing tadpoles and frogs, and it just totally captivated me from that point onwards. And yeah, since then I've done everything I can to try and better understand them, study them, and now conserve them. I could go on for hours on this. So I guess the thing that people don't realize about amphibians is just how many there are. So there are roughly 9,000 different species, and I'm in my early 40s, and over half of the amphibian species that we currently know of have been described in my lifetime. And so I think it's just how much we don't know about frogs, and that they do some really cool things like the Darwin's frogs, how they breed and give birth, but it's also how threatened they are. So of those roughly 9,000 species, more than 40% of them are threatened with extinction. So they're more threatened than any other group of animals that we know about. And as a trained conservation biologist, I felt that it's the most impactful thing I can do is to focus on amphibians. I guess the other thing is, you know, everyone knows about tigers are threatened, pandas are threatened, and they get a lot of the limelight and a lot of the funding for conservation. And I feel really proud that at London Zoo, I'm able to champion the underdogs, the amphibians and the reptiles and so on. So there are lots of benefits to having amphibians in the environment. They feed on pests. So, for example, in India, there was large-scale harvesting of frogs from rice paddies for the meat trade. And when those frogs disappeared, there was a massive proliferation of rice pests, so insects and things like that. They're also really important prey animals for other species. But also, I guess, in many different cultures around the world, amphibians have been important. They're signs of fertility and abundance and new life. And I guess in modern days, we've got some really beneficial human medicines have been kind of derived from amphibian skin secretions. So there are loads of benefits to having amphibians around, but people just probably they don't know about them.
Ben Tapley from London Zoo. A pub landlady has accidentally become known around the world after a free drinks offer led to rather more giveaways than she'd planned. Becky Webster, who runs the Gedling Inn in Nottinghamshire in central England, wanted to draw people to watch a local football team in the English Premier League. So she promised a free pint of beer for everyone every time Nottingham Forest scored, never imagining they'd end up beating Brighton 7-0.
So we posted it about 40 minutes before the game started. We only recently got the channels to be able to play the Nottingham Forest games. So we wanted to make sure we got it out there so that everybody knew that we had it on. So I just thought, let's do a crazy offer and see what happens. Not expecting it to blow up like it has, and definitely not expecting them to score seven goals. One and two, I was quite happy with. I said, you know, at least their customers will be happy. They're getting a few pints. And then I think by half time, I was starting to sweat a little bit. It was between elation and dread. Then by five, I think I was just praying for the final whistle.
And Becky hadn't told her partner and fellow landlord Cassian Prime about the promotion.
He was working on our house with my son and he was just getting loads of messages to say, oh, amazing offer at the Gedling Inn. And he was like, what are you on about? And then he was like, what have you done? I was like, maybe a little something.
I've walked in, the whole pub's had an uproar. Ah, you legend. I'm like, oh, no. By the seventh, I joined in and joined him for a pint. So it was kind of fun in the end. But yeah, I had no idea.
Luckily, the couple are both Nottingham Forest fans. And Becky says despite it costing them around $1,800, it was worth it.
The atmosphere was electric. Everyone was so happy, dancing, singing. It was like England had won the World Cup. It was over 300 pints, we think, at the end, probably costing about £1,500, but well worth it. Forest won, so well worth it.
The story has now gone viral on social media, and she's been amazed by all the attention.
People have messaged me from America, from Australia. I think we had one from Poland, Brazil. Everywhere. A lot of people were checking we were okay and that we hadn't gone bankrupt.
Becky Webster. Just before we go, we've been asking you to share the best advice you ever received from a grandparent. And Betsy from Madison in Wisconsin sent us a voice note.
My humble Galician grandmother had wise advice regarding money. Prestado es prestado, regalado es regalado, y business es business. It translates well. Loaned is loaned, gifted is gifted, and business is business. Her wisdom about so many things in life has been a beautiful and lasting treasure for my family. She was born in 1900 in a tiny village in Galicia, Spain, and emigrated to New York when she was 19. Her hard work and wisdom served her well throughout her 96 years, and I'm proud to share her wisdom. One time that it did serve me is when from time to time I would ask her to lend me money in cash to go to the movies. And she would remind me, yes, she would gladly lend me the money, but she reminded me always to pay her back. So that way, when I needed it again, she would have it to be able to lend me. So that's my wisdom from my grandmother.
We'd love to hear the best advice you've had. Just send us an email or voice note to globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. And that's all from the Happy Pod for now. This edition was mixed by Danila Varela, and the producers were Harry Bly and Rachel Barkley. The editor is Karen Martin. I'm Alex Ritson. Until next time, goodbye.